geldings in the arc, team tactics, and more Irish derby dominance for Aidan O'Brien. All that and more in this week's edition of The Front Page. Hello and a warm welcome, emphasis on warm, to the Racing Post's Front Page. We've got some seriously hot topics to dive into this week, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Lambourne correspondent Liam Head and Deputy Industry Editor Pete Scargill. We'll start with the hottest of all the debates, get straight into it, and that is the decision by France Gallo to permit geldings to run in the arc from next year. No sitting on the fence. We'll start with you, Liam. What's your take?
It's an interesting one, John. I mean, it's something that we've been sort of hearing rumours for a few months now. You know, you look at some of the horses that have sort of been against, allowed to run because they've been gelded. So, I mean, it was interesting to hear what sort of, you know, the likes of O'Brien and Magny have been saying about, you know, it's a bit of an unfair advantage for breeding situations. And Aidan O'Brien said it was... He said recently to David Jennings that geldings are easier to train than those that aren't. So I do understand that there comes a bit of an unfair advantage from that point. I personally don't see there being too much of an issue. I just think that, you know, you've got to kind of make it open to anyone available. You know, it's one of the hottest races of the year. And I just think you've got to kind of try some things new. Listen, it might not work. It might sort of backfire, but, you know, they're doing something different, and I think they should be commended for that, really.
Right, so your team, Francis Graffard, saying it should be a clash of the generations. You should have the best from each generation. It's a championship race. It should be the best horses. I sense maybe some concerns that it's slipping behind some other big prizes internationally. Pete, what's your argument for the other side of it?
I don't have an argument for the other side per se, John.
It has to be a black and white.
Yes, clearly. Well, I mean, that's I suppose gelding in a sense is a black and white thing.
Certainly isn't it?
I mean, I do think it's a shame. I think it's a shame that they felt they need to change the arc. The arc is, you know, we're brought up with the idea the arc is the pinnacle of the middle distance European flats season. That's why we have the big excitement when we have the Japanese horses come over, and, you know, when we see these champions re-emerge in the autumn to try and bring them back round and competing. But I just think it's a shame that they feel they've had to change and to bring it in line with other races. I mean, Liam made the point that they maybe it's dropping behind other races, but sort of bringing it down to that level almost, rather than trying to say, well, we want to build the arc up and make sure more people come to it and make it more desirable, would probably be my preferred way of doing it. So I think it's a shame. I understand why they've done it. It'll be interesting to see what sort of horses end up going there. And obviously, presumably, wouldn't it mean more older horses are kept in training because they're gelded? That's also maybe the people will be able to latch onto it. It's one of the things they talk about, the jumps. Get Constitution Hill ready for it, and all that sort of stuff. Jobs are given. So, you know, look, I don't know. I don't know whether your view sits with me or with Liam or in between, but I just think it's a shame, really. That would be my overriding feeling.
As host, I can reserve the right. I can just play you two off against one another. Let me play devil's advocate, which is my favourite role to play, as you know. There's this idea that keeps getting thrown about. Everyone who's commented on it ultimately has quite a vested interest. There's this idea that's been thrown about that it's a stallion-making race. I'm not convinced that's the case or has been for a long time. There's this idea that's thrown about that, you know, it is determining the breed, that it's kind of putting the different classic generations against one another. But I'd argue that, you know, we have the classics for that, ultimately. And also this idea that it's suddenly going to be full of geldings, but there are very few geldings that would feasibly have run in it. I think we're just in this sort of anomaly situation where you've got Calanagan and Goliath, and suddenly there's this clamouring.
It's like Rebels Romance.
Yeah, there's not a huge... It's not suddenly an influx of geldings that are going to have a chance in it. I don't know if too much is being made of it. I don't feel as outraged as everybody else does about it, put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I don't think it's going to change the whole complex of the race. I mean, like you said, this rule's come in, but it's not going to be a gelding-only field, almost. Like, we're still going to have, you know, the other horses in the race. And it, listen, it might change people's trainers' opinions of whether they think their horses aren't gelded are worth having a crack when it's going to be, it might be a tougher assignment for them, but it's still arguably the best race in the world. And I just think having the option of allowing it for anyone to be in there, I think it adds a bit more flavour to the race.
Some things just aren't made for everyone though, John. We can't include everyone all of the time.
No, so, I see that.
And you know, you want, what about races like, you think the Champion Stakes is going to be affected by this? You know, a race over 10 furlongs, roughly the same time, roughly the same ground that would previously been open to gelding. So it'll be interesting to know.
Interesting, Nick Smith at Ascot, Director of Racing, saying all in favour, brings it into line with the rest of the pattern.
Yeah, well, you know, look, there's very little that Ascot can do wrong at the moment. So if that's their view on things, then perhaps they're right or not. But I think it's a shame. I think it's a shame that they brought it in line with others. I think it's a shame that we're not trying to promote a race whereby you'd keep a horse entire to try and elevate its status as an ARC winner. So yeah, you're just a little bit sad this Monday, John. Just a little bit sad.
I mean, for what,
don't laugh at my sadness.
Sorry, it's funny to me. For what it's worth, I think I'd be on your side of it. I think I am marginally in favour of we should have just left it as it is.
And it's a time when, you know, there's this new task force set up in France Gallo. There's a lot of internal hand-wringing about the status and the future of French racing. And, you know, you wonder slightly, maybe this has been pushed through as a part of a programme to make French racing more dynamic and more appealing. So
the ARC was hardly suffering, though. This idea that we're excluding all these brilliant horses, what we're saying is essentially Calan, Degan and Goliath, and like you say, Rebel's Romance, potentially very good horses, should be running in the very best races, but they are still running in the best races, just not this one. Yeah. It just feels a little bit knee-jerk, perhaps, because I don't think the quality of the ARCs suffered.
Of all the things it could have changed.
It's a 5 million euro race, whatever it is. It's still attracting very good horses. It's not. I didn't come away from the ARC thinking, God, I wish Calandagan had been there, personally.
I don't think it's going to stop people from sending horses there, regardless if they've been gelded or not.
No.
I think there's still, the prize is the ultimate, and, you know, you've got, all right, Aidan O'Brien and John Magnier have come out and said this, but they're still going to have runners in the race because they are the very best around, and they're going to have as good of a chance as anyone. So,
but will they? That's the question, isn't it? That's the question. Is run if geldings are more tractable, which we're sort of taking to be true, I think that is fair.
Yeah,
is that going to affect the chances of the 3-year-olds in there?
Will it be as big a disadvantage to them as being drawn wide, or the weight allowance that 3-year-old fillies get? You know, there's a lot of things that a top quality colt has to overcome already in that sense. This, I suppose, this is another obstacle, but perhaps you can spin it the other way, and if they're able to overcome wide draws and top quality fillies and a field stacked full of unbelievably talented geldings that have appeared from nowhere, then that has, I'm sure, smarter people than I can market that effectively as a stallion prospect. So
yeah,
perhaps we'll see a revision in how things are done.
Well, this is what it comes down to, right? Is the ARC as a stallion making race? But who was
the last ARC
winner that went on to become See the Stars? Maybe.
Yeah, See the Stars. Yeah,
you know, I think that's
always happy to bring See the Stars into these conversations.
Is it a breed defining race in the way the Derby is, in the way the classics necessarily are?
Well, perhaps you're guessing into murkier waters around middle distance breeding.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had Golden Horn won the race and we got the likes of Trawler Man running. So there's still good horses, entire horses that win the ARC, John. Don't be so dismissive.
No, I'm not. This is
Don't be like John Gosden saying that middle, you know, these horses are too good for middle distance races.
These aren't my view. I'm merely stirring the pot to generate debate, you understand. That's my role here in this chair. It's one that's going to rage on anyway. And it surprised me a little, Liam. I don't know if you agree on just the amount of debate it has generated. We feel like we're a week on now and we've still got people coming out of the woodwork and having a view on it. It's a really interesting one.
Yeah, and this will, like you said, this will run on for some time. I mean, it's just for people that aren't aware, this isn't a change that's happening until next year. So we've still got to get this year's ARC out of the way. And as we edge closer to that race in October. The talk about that race is going to be as high as ever when there's, you know, more officials in and around Longchamp that, you know, at that time of the year. So this isn't going away anytime soon, I don't think.
No, an interesting one. We will move from the arc seamlessly to an arc winning rider, Christophe Soumillon. He was at a BHA hearing, appeals hearing, against a ban he picked up in the St. James's Palace Stakes for alleged team tactics aboard Puerto Rico. Interesting elements to his defence. He referenced some school children on the rail earlier in the day and that possibly being in his thinking. But generally, his point was he felt he was on a horse who had a habit of hanging. And he said that it was absolute nonsense that he had picked up an 8-day ban for team tactics. Pete, where do you stand on what you saw at Royal Ascot and indeed his defence?
Well, I'm intrigued that as a starting point, we don't know the decision of the panel at this point because it was adjourned because it went on for so long last week. You know, it was a defence that was passionately done by Christophe Soumillon. So you can't say that he's left anything out on the field whenever the decision comes in. No, I guess that goes to the heart of the issue. It's such an important hearing in terms of determining what team tactics may be, and you know, given the strength that we'll probably go on to talk about of the Ballydoyle operation, their ability to field multiple runners in the race, the fact they've probably already got Bo Echo in their sights in the Sussex Stakes, depending on which way this goes, you know, whether he gets off his appeal, whether so the appeal's upheld, whether he gets rejected, or indeed whether there's any changes to his, you know, an increase in his ban potentially, will determine how the rest of the season pans out. And I'm interested in that respect. Yes. So in terms of his defence, what was put forward, it was novel. Let's put it that way. It's always good to bring forward all possible aspects in terms of outside interference, the idea he was looking around because he'd heard his horse's heels being clipped, that the horse has a tendency to hang left. You know, you sense a lot of effort had gone into trying to explore all possible angles.
Yeah, and understandably, the school children one was a slightly quirkier one. That wasn't his whole defence. It's important to stress. You know, he had various arguments as to why it happened. I suppose, Liam, could you just speak to this as sort of, it might set a precedent, mightn't it, this? It feels like an important hearing.
Yeah, because it happened in, you know, one of the biggest races, the meeting at one of the biggest meetings of the year as well. And I mean, as Pete mentioned, there was a lot in his defence, but I think that the one we take about is the school children. I mean, everyone looks at that first and just thinks, well, he's got nothing to stand on. Like, you can't use that as an excuse because you're at a race course when there's, you know, 60, 70,000 people at the track. So it was an interesting one. I mean, do I believe that it was all part of team tactics? No, I don't think it was. I don't think Aidan O'Brien's the sort of person to do that, to try and aid another horse's, one of his horses' chances of winning. I think he's got, you know, he's got horses that are good enough to win, you know, whatever races they're in. Did Puerto Rico have a chance of winning the race? No. The sole aim was to try and do what you can to aid the best chance in the race, which was Stade. So it'll be interesting to see. I think the hearing this week, isn't it?
Thursday,
yeah.
It picks back.
So it's probably one of the, I'd say it's probably one of the most interesting hearings we'll have in terms of where it sits and, you know, the name of the jockey. And obviously he's been involved in a few issues in the past before, so it'd be interesting to see what the sort of the panel sort of come to with their decision about it.
And if you want a novel take on the
always
hearing, well, it's not mine. I would say I would encourage anyone to read Chris Cook's opinion piece from last week, where he talked about, you know, his view was that they did employ team tactics to aid Stade winning, and you know, that's fine because people employ tactics, and it's actually our own sort of faux disgust at the idea that people would employ team tactics in horse racing that's generated the extra hot air around it. So It's quite an interesting idea that you know, it's below racing and it's below these very, very good races and these very, very important races, that not every chap goes out there and performs on his merits, that actually there might be some kind of plotting and scheming going on to aid the number one chance. So
yeah. I felt very vindicated reading that, because I don't get the outrage. It's elite sport running for a significant amount of money. Of course, you're going to give your horses the best chance. Front runners, fine. Pacemakers, yeah. I just think that's how it works. If there's an advantage to be gained, they would not be doing their job if they didn't seek to exploit it. And you're almost more naive going into a race thinking, well, I'm going to run my horse and the best horse wins. If you have the option of running multiple horses, there will necessarily be, and understandably be, team tactics. I guess the issue here is when it strays into unfair advantage, when it strays into like a deliberate action,
yeah,
which is what the BHA on the day have perceived this to be.
Quite. And we also got to think about the people maybe betting on the race as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd
be good in such circumstances. Brandon Shader, chief executive of the BHA, talked about this in a media briefing last week about how they've been encouraging, in particular instances where they think team tactics may be deployed, to get the stewards to gather more information pre and post race to help assess their decision making.
Yeah, so there's a line, isn't there? There will always be a line where it goes from, this is just the tactics of a race and you're trying to get it, you know, get it run in a certain way or with a certain pace, etc., and blatantly just a horse not running on their merits.
Because it's scared of school children.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's it, isn't it? But I don't understand I think the rules are pretty good as they are. These are fairly few and far between cases that are this extreme. It was heartening in a way to see the BHA actually take a view and say, I was surprised that they did in a high profile race like that, actually come down and say, yeah, that was team tactics.
Well, it's good that they're coming down on it, because then it just shows you that they are aware of the situation. Obviously, this, as we've mentioned, team tactics are obviously deployed in, you know, you'd be fool not to have team tactics in a race when you've got 2-3 horses in a big race. I guess it's just the way that how they're implemented during the race, because, you know, you could have a trainer saying one thing, saying we want you to do this, we want you to do that, but then the thing that situation could change depending on how the race is run. You know, your tactic could go out the window in the first 100 metres. So, yeah, I think it's encouraging to see that they're looking into what's happened, and the fact that it's kind of, they've adjourned for a few days now to really assess, they've listened to the defence and everything like that. So it shows that, you know, people just can't get away with, you know, trying to create an unfair advantage.
And read Chris Kitt's column.
Yeah, it is very good. Yeah. I would encourage everybody to go and read that. Yeah. The thing that slightly concerned me was at Royal Ascot, I can't remember which former jockey it was, who said that the only mistake Soumillon made was making it so blatant. I didn't like that as a sort of the idea that, well, if it had been a little bit more discreet, it would have been fine.
Perhaps in the sense that he copped the ban because, you know, you talk about the surprise that the stewards took a view on the day. Well, perhaps their hand was forced to look at it in this through this prism because of the exaggerated nature of what happened. I think perhaps if you were looking more favourably, that might be what the former jockey was saying.
Yeah,
as opposed to it was, you know, you've got to be a bit more subtle when you're trying to let your stablemate allegedly up your inside.
Yeah, a very interesting debate, one that has ramifications for punters, for the sport, for the rules. It's a familiar one with horses running on their merits, team tactics, and it will be fascinating to see how that plays out on Thursday. It was also fascinating to follow the action this weekend. We had the Irish Derby hot on the heels of Royal Ascot, and it was once again Aidan O'Brien with a 1-2-3, now a clean sweep of the French, British and Irish derbies for the second year in a row. Benvenuto Cellini, how impressed were you, Liam, with that performance?
Yeah, very impressed, actually. I think the way that he kind of just, Ryan Moore almost just hit a button in the last sort of furlong and away he went. Obviously, there was a lot of debate sort of drama around Epsom. You know, he finished 10th in the race.
He wasn't there.
Officially, he didn't. He was a non-runner, but he finished the race. We've covered that. Let's not go down that road again.
Let's.
Well, I'm just saying, like, it was, he did have a run at Epsom, and what the run that we've seen, whether it was heavily impacted by what happened in the stalls beforehand, it wasn't an encouraging run. Whereas this performance, I mean, it just always, it's, again, it proves that you should never rule out or underestimate the powers that Aidan O'Brien has. I mean, to have a 1-2-3, I think it was reading, it was his 18th Irish Derby. It was the 9th time, I think, that he saddled a 1-2-3 in the race. I mean, they're just, you're just running out of superlatives to describe him and his training ability. I think it's just absolutely incredible. I mean, the three horses of his just well clear of the rest. I just think it was a brilliant performance, and it was probably, there was probably a lot more relief from probably Ryan's point of view, because I imagine it was a difficult choice to choose between having the option of riding Benvenuto to Cellini or the Derby winner Christmas Day. So yeah, I thought it was an exciting race, but it just proves that the firepower that Aidan O'Brien has at his disposal.
Was this just a case of best horse winning on better ground?
I mean, I think that's a very pithy way to describe it, yes.
We struggle to get a 600-word report out of that.
They need a few more adjectives to make that a report.
No, he was the best horse.
He was the best horse.
And priced accordingly.
Correct. And clearly he benefits from the ground. He ran very poorly on bad ground at Doncaster last year as well. So clearly the ground, as well as the stalls incident that Liam doesn't want to talk about, affected what happened.
Still unbeaten as a three-year-old.
Exactly. But for all the superlatives of what happened, and I mean, it is remarkable that Ballydoyle keep rocking up in these classics and keep doing clean sweeps. I mean, it is mildly depressing as well, frankly. I mean, we sent over, there were two British runners. Richard Hannon obviously had a go with a horse who got sort of a winning you in type entrance. Yeah, I'll go with entrance.
That works.
And then Raheem just, you know,
didn't look like horse, stayed with
it. Yeah, and you know, no Godolphin runners in the race again. No runners from Judmont, no runners from Wathner. I mean, they've kind of got the field to themselves in this division at the moment. And that's not a great look, really, is it? I mean, that lack of competitiveness in that arena. I mean, John Gosden mentioned it in a interview that Lee Roth said on the eve of Royal Ascot, talking about the impact of so many Ballydoyle horses in the Derby at Epsom. So for all of the achievement and for all of the fact that you have to say fair play to them for once again winning the Irish Derby and once again doing a clean sweep and once again having all the laurels, it points to a deeper issue, which is perhaps why you need more horses who aren't gelded running in the arc.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand, you know, for looking from the outside, you see Aidan O'Brien yet again winning the race, and you think, like, where's the competition coming from? You know, he had the three best horses in the race and they finished in the first three, and the nearest challenger, British challenger as well, Raheeb, was, you know, a few lengths back and forth, the best of the rest. So
he's the horses like Lamborn, he's a dual Derby winner, being a pacemaker at Royal Ascot. Like, if they have such dominance in that division all of the time and they've got Derby winners coming out of their ears, what does it mean to have a Derby winner when you've got a Derby winner every year? I don't know. I'm not
is the onus not on everybody else to catch up, or is there materially some reason why they can't?
I don't think it would be fair to say Ballydoyle need to take their foot off the pedal a bit, give everyone else a chance.
But is there something in the system? Is there some reason that is preventing other trainers from doing this?
Yeah, we could get hung up on this point for a long time, and I wasn't necessarily trying to take us down this road. But yeah, I mean, their love of middle distance horses and their weight and emphasis that they put on trying to produce those horses, and the access they have to bloodlines, your Galileos and all that sort of stuff, obviously gives them an advantage, and they're able to roll out several of these horses each year. Whereas others who have tried to find these Derby horses can't necessarily find them in the same way. So
are they now looking elsewhere?
Possibly. The Derby will always have an appeal, but it needs to get to a situation where, I'd have loved to have seen Raheem run better.
Yeah.
For example, that's, if he would have managed to get in the mix, then he could have gone, oh, this is an exciting horse to.
Yeah.
So, there's that sort of, we lack that bit of hope. I lack hope and I'm a bit sad today, John. The two big ones.
Well, then I'll come to you next, Liam. a lot of the competition then is going to be within the ranks. Where do you see Benvenuto Cellini among those three-year-old colts at Ballydoyle? Obviously, Constitution River's another one, but he's maybe more mile and a quarter.
Yeah, I think the performance yesterday just proved that Epsom or non-Epsom, whatever you want to say, it was just a flash in the pan, and he proves that he could be the sort of the next sort of middle distance superstar for the team. I think we've seen them have superstars down the year in that division. Could he go up and trip it? I don't know.
Could he win an arc before they let geldings in?
Well, I mean, it'd be interesting to see what they do, but I just think that I think they'll try and certainly keep him and maybe Constitution River away from each other. I think Constitution River might be kind of better suited to a mile and a quarter. So
you've got Christmas Day potentially to go up and trip.
Yeah, so I mean,
he looked like he wanted to go up and trip Christmas Day.
They're not sure.
We all know about long, ongoing Christmas Days, don't we? Christmas Days that run and run and run. So
great stuff. We did we did have an O'Brien not winning the Pretty Polly Stakes. Counter to your other point.
Yes, strained. Well, absolutely. I'm obviously, my wife Tina was there on Saturday, and she was very complimentary about Estrange.
We should have got her on, really. What are her reflections on the performance?
What I'm bringing you is a on-the-ground view of what happened. So that filly was very ready to perform, and she did extremely well, and fair play to them for having a crack on ground that isn't necessarily to their advantage. I thought it was a good race. Want to look around well as well in that. But yeah, Thundering On. Just don't know. She seemed to. I think she coughed afterwards.
Said to have coughed, yeah.
But you just feel that perhaps a bit of ease in the ground would help her prospects as well.
What about the Epsom form? I think the second came out and didn't run particularly well in the Ribblesdale. Mm. Are we worried about it? I mean, it was just such an impressive performance at Epsom. I think Thundering On will come good.
She didn't scramble home in the Oaks, did she, from a horse that then bombed out?
No.
So, if she coughed and the ground was maybe a bit quicker than ideal, I'd say she was up against a horse who clearly was delivered to be at its absolute peak on that day. Now, there was a lot of aspects that could have contributed to her not being able to get ahead in front. The Stranger would be an interesting one for the arc later in the year. Obviously, she was being teed up for it last year, got a wide draw and a cough at the same time, so didn't run. So perhaps a bit of ease in the going and a better draw and better health, of course, will allow her to perform at Longchamp this year.
A strange, definitely an interesting one for the arc later in the year. I'm sure we'll be debating the decision to allow geldings from next year right up until the big race in October. I'm afraid we won't be doing any more debating that today. That's all we have time for. Thank you to Liam and Pete for joining me. Thank you for following along at home. Be sure to tune in again next week for the latest edition of The Front Page.